Next, Srila Prabhupada gives a reading from Book 2 of his biographical poem series, Remembering Srila Prabhupada. This was given at Gita Nagari on January the 29th, 1984.
Let's have some reading about Prabhupada. We were reading about Prabhupada on 26th Second Avenue in this Remembering Srila Prabhupada format. This has definitely become another kind of bona fide Leela, like Krishna Leela and Chaitanya Leela, to read and discuss the activities of Prabhupada, because he's always the founder Acharya of ISKCON and the Siksha Guru of all the disciples as they come in more and more in the future. As he set the pace for hearing about him, we can dedicate ourselves to this movement and know practically how to work. So these are some memories of those times, especially when Prabhupada began his movement. This is called Displeased. Bruce's mother, Chuck's mother, my mother, the thugs, the lawyer in defense of illicit sex, an upstairs tenant, these were not pleased. Bruce's mother was all right, but when they told her about Krishna consciousness, she thought her sons had gone crazy. "Who is crazy?" Prabhupada replied. "Are we or they? Take it to the platform of reason. One who lives for the temporary body is doomed at death to lose all that he works for. Is he not crazy? We live to serve eternal Krishna in this world and the next. What is wrong with that? Who is crazy?" She admitted the new good qualities in her sons, social and human improvements, and no more drugs, but shaved heads. At the second initiation, when Bruce became Brahmananda Das, Mrs. Sharp attended, and Prabhupada told her son, "Bow down before your mother." She was sitting on a metal folding chair, and it was awkward, yet she liked it. But when Prabhupada asked for a donation, she exploded. "What? I have already given you 2 sons. Swamiji said, because Krishna said, sex should be used as religious only, to deliver and raise a Krishna-conscious child, or else it is fornication like a pig, with next life's karma in the body of a pig. This displeased many, even the liberal, who otherwise liked the enchanting chanters. And Prabhupada had written in his book, pornography should be censored. A disciple asked, "Can this be edited out? Because what will the American people think?" "I cannot change the philosophy," said Prabhupada, "to please the Americans. Proud Americans may think their missiles and dollars can save them from suffering and death, whereas an Indian's philosophy is weird. But down they go, one by one, bowing to old age, disease, and death, and their nation cannot save them, and their highways cannot save them, nor their mild and hard drugs, nor can their emancipation set them free. Is it really weird or wrong to ask people to have sex like humans, as taught by every scripture of the world? Who is crazy?" Unique mercy. You knew it was deep mystic attraction to cook for Krishna and give out the prasadam, and you were expert. The crew liked your kichari on board the Jaladuta, and when Sally Agarwal saw your lunch cooked magically in her kitchen on your triple-tiered brass cooker, that wonderful paraphernalia you never tired of praising, and which actually did perform a miracle in cookery, making rice 3 or 4 different vegetables as well as dal, all within 45 minutes on a single flame, under your nimble hands, or your quick instinctive intelligence. When Sally saw it, she wanted one for her husband, who had been gulping dry sandwiches until you came. From your very first days in Manhattan, you envisioned the exciting prospects of food distribution, writing to Mrs. Morarji, "When they will have the actual commodity and feel pleasure by eating very delicious prasadam of Balakrishna, I am sure a unique thing will be introduced to America. Even your simple cutting of an apple and giving it out at night in the storefront was something extraordinary to those sitting on the floor, hearing chanting and then taking an apple slice from you in silence, watching you spit out the seeds onto the nearby sink. How wonderful, they thought. No one else can do that. At noon, you gathered a dozen young men who came without fail, even if they could not follow the regulations. No one missed the prasadam or was unenthusiastic. Was it ordinary rice, just some unleavened bread? But weren't rice and bread available in the luncheonettes? And who had even thought of rice as special until you brought it as prasadam? It wasn't just rice. It was the way you served it and the prayers and having the open pots on the floor in front of the little picture of Lord Chaitanya and the fact that you were there cooking or at least presiding, moving on bare feet in and out of the kitchen. You were openly stressing prasadam by quoting the Bhagavad Gita, and your followers also accepted that food became completely spiritual when offered to Krishna in bhakti yoga. All right, we said, this is Bhagavad Prasad. We had known soups, but not hot spicy dal. We knew peas, carrots, etc., but not your special mixtures of spinach, cauliflower, eggplant, and potatoes, and the secrets of masala spicing, the luxury of deep frying in ghee. Made food new, healthy, hot, and delicious, and all brought by you. It was not bread he gave me. He gave me prasadam. This was life, and he saved my life. Swamiji. Now we know the name Swamiji is a third-class address used for any Swami, no more respectable than Mr. But somehow it was dear to us then because it was you and all we knew. Swamiji meant you, the dear preceptor, guru, lord and master, the expert teacher to whom we surrendered. Swamiji, eternal spiritual guide, solver of immediate daily problems, like what to do about roaches and how to answer the challenge. You're all escapists. It was Swamiji who had to deal with the landlord, Mr. Chudi, when all our efforts failed. He liked you, but not us. On getting a curt note from a writer who lived upstairs, who said his musical and cooking tastes did not run into Indian, and so he should please desist from loudly singing mantras and cooking with ghee, it was Swamiji who asked him to come down, and who calmed him with a discourse beyond designations. We knew that Swamiji was alone in his apartment, writing, and that sometimes he rested, but that even at those times we could see him through the window in his room. He lived in our view and was always ready to help, as long as we were serious and not a waste of time. Who can say now how much of his time was wasted on us? But he gave it unstintingly. Swamiji, soft as a rose, he continued to receive the eccentric Robert Nelson, joking with him like an old friend. How are you, Mr. Bob? Although the man was clearly not in order. Swamiji, hard as a thunderbolt, he chased Raphael away from the door because he had punched a devotee, carried marijuana, and posed a threat to Swamiji's movement. Swamiji means Srila Prabhupada in his first temple, 1966, just as regal as he ever would be, although without a car, wearing an unpressed cuddy dhoti and an inexpensive jersey with a stretched turtleneck. We knew he was as good as God and vowed to him, but lacked the means and knowledge to rightly serve and worship. He was the same person as he was later, but with little money and few men. His plans were ambitious, but he was at the beginning. The mixture of his grave, refined dignity and the little world he created out of a small storefront and two upstairs rooms, where he handled all the petty cash and cooked the sweets and sat alone with whoever asked, out of a rag-tag group of boys and one girl, is very special and dear to recall. Swamiji, I too have been to other places, seen you and been with you on later fields, where there was bigger work to do, and I have taken on new services, new names, but I always return to you in the first days, because that is the way it will always be. Srila Prabhupada, you often recalled the beginning and said, those were happy days. When you would look out your kitchen window, the weedy tenement garden below, the rush and noise of the traffic on First Street, and you would be full of hope throughout your years of travel and fabulous growth of success after opening multi-million-dollar temples, writing and publishing 60 big books, and taking thousands of disciples. Still, you often said, those were happy days. Remembering them one by one, as if they were before you, you spoke about your preaching at 26 Second Avenue, even in your very last days in Vrindavan. They were happy days for you and also for us, the boys you lifted up. They were happy days for the whole world when you began your preaching on Second Avenue, your first place in America, when you chanted in Tompkins Square Park and stood before the oak tree. Then one winter day in 66, you shocked us. Now I will go to the next place, you said, to San Francisco. Take care of everything here, keep up the classes and the love feasts, go out with magazines and kirtan. Everything should be maintained in my absence. And then you left in January 1967. And then you left in November 1977. And now we are living on your orders. And just one more. This is the last one in this book about 66. Prabhupada, if in those days you were externally so meagerly equipped and the Krishna consciousness movement had barely begun, then why do we recall it as so important? Is this merely nostalgia? The answer is no. It is not mere nostalgia. It is remembrance of Krishna material sentiment? No. Lord Krishna himself declares the pure devotee's life is as good as the eternal pastimes of Krishna. Prabhupada, when you were Swamiji, you could not enact many of your far-reaching plans because your instruments, the disciples, were too few, and they were just learning how to be humans. There were few published books and no temples, except for one meager storefront. Yet we think of you in those early days so fondly because we clearly see you entirely depending on Guru and Krishna. Even a neophyte is moved to know how you suffered heart attacks for our sake while crossing the ocean on the Jaladuta. Seeing you alone carrying forward the worldwide movement on your shoulders, naturally we are more and more drawn to you. Lord Rama worked with brave, noble monkeys, but you worked with the Lower East Side's uncivilized men, and to think of you that way endears us to you more and more. As Lord Krishna went on to Dwarka to enact his later pastimes, and yet his simple childhood pastimes are the dearest, so you and we like to remember the earliest days of ISKCON when the Krishna consciousness movement was only a playful, charming, seemingly helpless child. It was not an ordinary child, and now we know it more and more. As ISKCON grows, covering and benefiting all the earth, yet we continue to recall those childhood days. Remembering your willingness to work under such rude beginnings, your positive joyfulness while physically carrying forth the entire ISKCON, we are drawn to you more and more. You did not look down upon the situation as unbearable while stinking bums barged into your temple, or when LSD freaks visited your room to claim that they were God, or when the upstairs tenant poured water through your ceiling. You accepted all these as Krishna's mercy, the opportunity to preach in New York City. Later, one of your godbrothers said, he also could have succeeded in America, but he did not have a temperament inclined to low-class men, being himself very high-class and inclined toward scholars. But that you agreed to work with us is not due to your inclination towards Lower East Side youth. It is your endearing compassion, your dedication to the order of your Guru Maharaj, your complete faith in the power of the holy name. And when we recall this, we are amazed. Remembering you on the Bowery and on the Lower East Side, all devotees are inspired to go on and do the same, giving their association to whoever shows a spark, whether in China, East Europe, Ireland, or New York City today. Just as the sun is always illuminating the universe, your 26 Second Avenue days will always illumine the preachers throughout the world of ISKCON. Bhajan, reading. Any questions? Yes.
By reading and hearing it, you feel like I'm almost there. But there's a part of me, at least that myself, I know I wasn't there. But it feels like it can almost be there. So is that spiritually introduced to mind so I can one day be there?
The feeling that you're not there? You feel you're there, and then you, but you're not there. Well, just by hearing, that's also a way of being with Prabhupada and his preaching. And then also, so now we have to make history again by our present activities. Our activities include hearing about the past activities of Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya. But, yes. Let the hearing, the sweet activities of the pure devotees inspire you to yourself now serve nicely. Just like we hear, oh, the landlord poured water through Prabhupada's roof and still he endured. So we think, oh, how wonderful he was and it must have been to be with him. But we also think, yes, that quality is wonderful. So if the same thing happens to me, I hope that I'll be able to be tolerant and go on preaching. That quality transfers over into our present activities, appreciating the hearing. None of us were there when Lord Chaitanya was there, but when we read Chaitanya Charitamrita, we also see it's before us happening. And that in itself is real. Someone could say, well, but you really weren't there, you can't say you're really experiencing it. But you are, by smaranam, by remembering it. That's all, it's absolute. And that enhances our activities now. Here we are in 1984, and yet part of our life is to hear about Lord Chaitanya 500 years ago. It's part of our life now through the hearing process. And it's satisfying. Yes, it's not that you were there, but now you are by the hearing. The qualities of Lord Chaitanya or Prabhupada, you imbibe. And he himself, not just his qualities, but he himself, you follow, you worship, you remember. The feeling is that, I just heard yesterday Prabhupada's 73 talk about his spiritual master's disappearance, and he said, there's nothing to lament because his disappearance and appearance are the same thing. But yes, of course, there is that feeling of separation. But the main thing he was stressing was not lamentation, but fulfillment of his being present in another place by his lila now, and by your remembering.